Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, April 4th, 2022. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just a helpful tips for people joining via phone calls, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you'd like to make comments, if you go under reactions, click on the hand raise icon that will lower, raise or lower your hand. That indicates us that somebody is intending to speak. We have ASL interpreters with us on this call. So I would ask everyone that please keep in mind, everyone who joins on phone calls, it's important for them to know who's the speaker at the moment. So I would request for you to share state your name before you start speaking. Chair Posner, I would go ahead and read the agenda at this point, and afterwards I would take the attendance of our meeting AAC members. We will take the roll call of the committee members after I finish reading this agenda. At 5:35, Dr. Posner will go through the motion of approving this agenda, today's meeting agenda, and last month's meeting minutes, as well as the board report. At 5:40, we have a committee discussion about floating bus stops. At 6:10, we have another committee discussion. It's about the AAC bylaws, enforcement, and modifications. At 6:30, we have the third committee discussion about 2023 budget discussion, items passed, and work plan for 2022. At 6:45, we will have any public comments. And this at 7 o'clock, we will receive bus and rail subcommittee report from Tino Colabia. At 7:15, we will receive Metro Access subcommittee report by Paul Semelford. The meeting adjourns at 7:30 p.m. At this point, I will start taking the roll call. Please confirm your presence. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Colabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Henderson. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you.
Doris Reed. There will be a fight somewhere on that subject. Next slide.
Thank you. Denise Rush.
Present.
Okay. Paul Semaphore.
Okay. Interviews.
Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Kelly Simonow. Okay, that concludes our roster for today's meeting. When we get to public comments, I will share information as far as how anyone intending to send us public comments can do so. At that point, I will also share the timeframe for public comments. Actually, I'll share that now. Every member of the public who wants to make public comments would receive 3 minutes before 3 minutes and approximately 30 seconds in advance, I would alert the speaker. And at the end of the 3 minutes, there would be a sound informing that the time has ended. We are keeping the time frame to make sure that anybody who intends to speak gets the time to do so. At this point, Chair Calabria, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
It's Phil's meeting.
Hello?
Yes.
I think this is the AAC meeting.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Thank you. Having heard the agenda, without objections, we'll accept the agenda as read. Are there any objections or suggestions? Raise your hand. Seeing none, we have our agenda. So let's move forward. Hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to read the prior meeting minutes. It was a month away, so you've had lots of time to look at them. And can we have a motion to approve the minutes?
This is Pat. I move that the minutes be approved as written.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. It's open for discussion. Are there any discussion of the minutes? Objections? Additions, subtractions? Without objections, the minutes are approved as written. The board report. Again, it was a busy month last month, and we covered most of what we did. The final report to the board, which will be the oral report to the board, we will add what happens this evening, bus rail, and also metro access subcommittees. So our reports to the board are living documents. We try to keep them as up to date as possible. Hopefully everyone has an opportunity to read the quote final draft of the written report to the board, which went out. And it's open for comments or a motion for approval.
This is Darnese. I move that we approve the chairman's report pending additions from bus rail and metro access.
Second.
Thank
Paul Semaphore.
It's on the floor for discussion. And without objections, we will use that as our submission to the board. Thank you all very much. So we're ready to move on to the floating bus stops and the update for the committee discussion. Where we are with the floating bus stops is floating right now. There have been numerous discussions at bus rail. There have been numerous hearings in Montgomery County and Arlington County. We have had guests come to various of our subcommittee meetings and talk about them. Most recently, DDOT, the DC Transportation Group, was talking about setting a standard for their floating bus stops. And they requested input from our committee so that WMATA could have some input into the floating bus stops. And the bottom line is they are open to suggestions. And that's why on this agenda, we are asking for input from the folks that have been involved at the various levels, at the county level, at the subcommittee level. So the floor is open. Please, Patrick, thank you. And anybody else, please raise your hand. We will call you in sequence. So Patrick, you're—
Hey, thank you, Phil. And I'm sorry I missed that meeting last week. There was just no way I could make that meeting on. I would first start off with two suggestions. One, before they build anything, just like they're doing in Montgomery County, that they put together a demonstration project so that folks can go and take a look at it and see how they're going to maneuver to the floating bus stops. That's going to help people with, you know, visually impaired. It'll help them. It's going to help folks that are in wheelchairs to see if they can maneuver to get onto the, you know, floating bus stop, all that sort of thing. The second thing that is critical that they do, and this is something we're finding in Montgomery County, is that they have to provide effective communication indicating to a person that they have moved from the sidewalk area to the middle of the street, to the first lane of traffic. And what we're proposing in Montgomery County is that they put together that they use the an accessible pedestrian signal type device that will indicate that the bus stop has been moved from the sidewalk to the first lane of traffic, and then also provides a red light to indicate to bicyclists coming down.
Excuse me, Patrick.
Yeah.
I am sorry to interrupt, but we can hear a lot of background noise. If someone could possibly.
Hang on, let me mute that up. I'm sorry.
I don't think it's your background. I think somebody else has their phone, his or her microphone on, and that's what we're hearing.
There we go. That's gone now. Okay. It was something in the background that I thought was stopped, but it kept starting up again. Great. Let me start over again, if I may. Two things. I think the first thing that I think is critical is that before they install anything, that they put together a pilot project that's going to demonstrate, you know, what this floating bus stop is going to look like, whether it's going to be a shared platform or an independent bus stop in the middle of the street, so that individuals can walk it and they can see if it's going to be an effective installation of the floating bus stops. In Montgomery County, they're on their, fifth or so installation, and all five have been different because they learned from installation to installation what worked and what didn't work. But that's really no way to trial by error is no way to install these floating bus stops. That would be number one. Number two, and this deals with the ADA, you have to provide with any of these facilities effective communication, indicating to perhaps a visually impaired person, blind person like myself, that, oh, by the way, we just moved that bus stop from where it used to be on the sidewalk where you could find it, and it's now in the first lane of traffic. So I need to know that has been moved. Originally, folks in Montgomery County had indicated that they were going to use a sign with an arrow. That's not effective communication. That doesn't tell me anything. I need something orally. So that's going to speak. So what we're indicating in Montgomery County we want to do is to have an accessible pedestrian signal device that would do a couple of different things. One, if you hold the button in, it would announce to you that the bus stop has been moved and you have now a floating bus stop that is located, you know, where it's located. And then two, when it's safe to cross, it is safe to cross, you would have a light go on like a traffic light that would indicate to bicyclists and scooter people that they have to stop because you're going to have a person who's going to be crossing that and needs, you know, the safety of not being able to see what's going on. And that would give the individual, you know, a reasonable amount of safety going through. And then, of course, you'd have the arrow, which would help the deaf-blind individual. So those things are going to help to provide more, you know, effective communication. And I remember when we talked to, I think it was DC before, they had no idea that kind of stuff was needed. I think, Carol, I did hear from Anu that you had talked to them about this effect, you know, making sure that effective.
About a sign that is that's audible that tells you that
right.
stop. Yes. We had a regional meeting last week, and I expressed that particular point. As I was, I took very careful notes about your statements the last time we met on the advisory committee. And I we have someone that's representing WMATA in that discussion as well. And he's very aware of what you're recommending. And we did separately from what Montgomery County is doing, we did arrive at, for DDOT, we are looking for a crosswalk sign that's similar to that is used in mid-block crossings. That would have some sort of a flashing element for the bikers that to alert them that there's somebody that will be crossing, and then there would be, then it would stop in a sort of like a red light that stops flashing.
Yes. Okay.
What I think is a good idea, which is I think what Montgomery County is doing, is they're taking an element they already use and trying and changing it
and to adapt it
to adapt it. But that's what is being proposed to DDOT, because they're coming up with some bus stops in the near future, and what we were trying to do is help them find something that was reasonable. And as I said, all of our partners regionally are working together and learning from each other on a regular basis. So
yep.
I think that you're being successful in your advocacy in Montgomery County.
Great. And the I was going to say one last thing.
Well, wait a second, Patrick.
Yeah.
Before you do that, I see Doris and I see Steve as committee members, and I also see Barbara Millville, who will come on after the committee is finished. I'd also like to point out one of the things Carol pointed out at that meeting, and I think it's critical, that the whole idea of floating bus stops should be developed with a goal in mind. And it's very easy to say safety, but it's important to know why the district, Montgomery County, Arlington, Prince George's County, WMATA might want a floating bus stop. And what goal does it serve? Then what is currently being done is how do you make it safe and usable for everyone that is a stakeholder? And the stakeholders include the drivers, the bus drivers, the pedestrians, bicyclists, and bus riders. And then at some point, one has to decide whether the cost of making it safe and usable for everybody still reaches the goal of why it was originally designed or put into place. So, think about that when we're talking about it. We don't want to spend all our time in the weeds. We want to look at the big picture. Do we really need them? Is it serving the community with safety and efficiency and sustainability? And if the concept of having a floating bus stop is one that is really necessary, then let's get back into the weeds and look at how do you make it safe for everybody, which is what all the discussion has been. So let me defer to Doris, then Steve, and Tino now has his hand up. So go ahead, Doris, you're on the clock.
Thanks. I associate myself with the comments made by Patrick and by Phil. I wanted to ask, however, why we're doing it this way when we do have a model for something that is very similar, and that's down there on K Street in Northwest Washington with the bus islands. I'm not saying they were perfect. They were, you know, created originally in before the ADA. They were improved later on. But the point is, the crossing to the islands, at least the legal crossing, is at intersections. And right now, the way the floating bus stops are being constructed, it's ad hoc where you're going to go off of the sidewalk to get over to these floating bus stops. And there's really no consistency. It's important when a person who is blind or vision impaired, and for others perhaps even with intellectual or developmental disabilities, to have consistency in where these bus stops are going to be located. But the advantage of doing it at the end of a sidewalk, at an intersection, is so that people know where it's going to be, and because it's at an end, an intersection, so that I think it would better encourage the cyclist to stop and come to, and I think there need to be laws that they have to, in the jurisdictions, that they have to come to full stop. And so the last thing that I will say is that I think it is going to be hard to balance everything between the various stakeholders. But I ask myself, shouldn't priority be given to pedestrians who are trying to use public transportation, for God's sake? And that's at least what I hope will happen from this. Thank you for letting me speak, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Doris. Steve, you're up next. You're on the clock.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. First, I strongly concur with what Patrick said, in particular, that we need to see a prototype. And if there are alternative prototypes, let's see both of them. I think oftentimes it's so important. I recall that we had a particular issue with some announcements that were being made on the buses and how they would relate to, you know, our constituencies. And it was when we actually had a bus, as an example, pull up in front of the building and we took a look, that it truly clarified the issues and what our concerns should be. So I totally concur with Patrick there. I think that they have to be at intersections. And we're going to need, in my opinion, two bumps if it's a bicycle lane. One bump for as a warning, and the second one just before the crosswalk. So the warning, warning and crosswalk, I think just one bump won't be sufficient, because you need people to get to a pretty slow speed to stop. Also, Phil, you raised a critical point, and I hadn't thought about this. It needs to be determined why that island is in place, and it could be different for different streets. I'll give you an example. A good example of San Francisco, where on Market Street, one side of the island is for local buses, which are electric, and the other side are for express buses, which use gas. They're also building on another street an express lane in the middle, and they're using an island for an express lane. And so they have two totally different functions. You know, if we're dealing with a bicycle issue, that's a different thing than if we're dealing with dealing with something else. So the reason is very important. And I concur with Doris. They have to be at intersections, because it's the only way that everyone is going to know how to deal with these. And the kiosks.
30 seconds.
Okay, Ed, this is quick. And the kiosks, which are often built on these, need to, on the side nearest the crosswalk, be open, that is glassless, so that so that everybody can move into and under the kiosk. Perhaps the glass is on the, let's say, on the left side, but on the right side needs to be glassless. Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Okay. Tino, you're on the clock.
Yes, it's good that Doris reminds us that floating bus stops existed decades ago, at least on K Street in Washington, D.C. But in recent years, floating bus stops have been built at the encouragement and the urging of bikers. Bike lanes now exist adjacent to floating bus stops, and that's one of the problems. And it'll even be a worse problem if the District of Columbia passes legislation which will permit out Idaho stops. Idaho stops basically allow bicyclists to continue the momentum, whether there's a stop sign, a yield sign, or whatever. They won't have to come to a full stop like other vehicles. So I think that floating bus stops preceded bicycle lanes, but bicycle lanes have so much, may I say, momentum that miles and miles of them are projected, and probably more when the federal legislation hands out money for transportation to cities. We really have to, I don't think we'll be able to stop the building of floating bus stops because of the bicycle move. So we've got to figure out how to deal with them. And in DC, we have to get people to think about the dangers of Idaho stops. Thank you.
Thank you, Tino. Carol, are you still there? Okay, Barbara.
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Okay, Carol, thank you. Can you give us an update? Because there has been a lot of talk at the FTA about safety and funding infrastructure and ideas of what studies might be interesting in being done. And is there anything being done by the FTA as well as what's currently being done with WMATA and the jurisdictions?
You mean in reference to floating bus stops?
Yes.
I am not aware of their involvement with floating bus stops. The issues that I have been seeing have been local in the Washington metropolitan area. And I do know that a lot of jurisdictions are dealing with that because of the high death accident and death rate for bicyclists. So that's what's fueled this, but I'm not aware of what the FTA is doing in reference to that.
Thank you. I would bring up, I know Arlington County has a Project Zero, which is looking at pedestrian safety and accidents. And it sounds as though there is a bicycle Project Zero for bicycle safety. Is anybody talking to anybody else? If anyone has been to Amsterdam, where the bicycle is supreme, you have no guarantee of surviving stepping into a bicycle lane in the city of Amsterdam. And chances are you won't. And part of the problem with bicycle accidents is it's quite frequently the fault of the bicyclist doing dangerous things, or the electric scooter, or the skateboard. And so the question I have is, again, the initial goal, is it safety of all stakeholders or only bicyclists? And if so, is everyone at the table? And again, are there goals beyond just safety? Because the original presentation that I saw on the floating bus stops was the efficiency of getting the bus back into traffic after they pulled over to the curb. And that's the question for you, please.
Taken your conflict between cars and bicyclists and moved it to bicyclists and pedestrians. And so initially, and I think we were some of the first in the area to get these floating bus stops when they started in 2015, started installing them in 2017. And so it has evolved, and Montgomery County will be the first to tell you that they really didn't take the pedestrians into consideration. Matter of fact, one of the most, one of the accidents that almost took place was with Charlie Crawford when he was crossing in 2018 and a bike went past him, whizzing past him. And he had a guide dog with him, of course. And he was within 3 inches of getting hit. So, I mean, that's kind of what crystallized it to us in Montgomery County. And I would say for those that want to stop it, this is a nationwide phenomenon, just like Vision Zero is. And so you're not going to stop them just like you couldn't stop roundabouts. What you need to do is to make them safer for pedestrians. And the other question you asked, why are they doing this? One of the benefits of getting scooters and bikes off the primary sidewalk and putting them in the bus, these protected bike lanes, is that you are getting them off the primary sidewalk. So that makes the primary sidewalk safer, but you've got to also build in this other safety things and make it, as everyone else just said, consistent, so that you know from whether you're in DC, Virginia, Maryland, let's say in this area, everything constructed the same way. That's
good. Thank you, Patrick. And the remaining hand I see is Barbara. Go ahead. You're on the clock.
Hey there, Barbara Millville speaking. I have been to Amsterdam and I concur with what you're saying. There, the bicyclists have their own lanes and they do get tickets if they don't stop at their own traffic signals. Basically, my comment was pertaining to Patrick's comment, and he mentions that audible pedestrian signals may be a solution for this floating bus stop issue. I wanted to bring to your attention that in Virginia, the audible pedestrian signals are being turned off by VDOT, et cetera. Nearby restaurants and residents are complaining that the sound is too loud for them. Therefore, we should not count on audible pedestrian signals to help resolve this issue. I've also spoken to an orientation and mobility instructor in Virginia, and she concurs that this is definitely happening. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. I do have a question. That is not, as I know, across Virginia, but specific jurisdictions and locations. So is that DDOT doing it?
It depends on what road it is. If it's a state road, it's VDOT. Like Arlington County, it would not. It would be Arlington County, perhaps.
Thank you.
Depends who's maintaining the road.
Thank you. The reason I ask is I live above a state road with the signals, and the sounds are not annoying at all.
Well, you have birds over there.
He hasn't turned them off, so I wanted to note. And if it is VDOT, that's something that we need to be aware of.
If you did want to interact with VDOT, you need to either telephone them or send in a report. And you need to send in a report. They have a website, need to create a username and password, that whole business. And I kind of got lazy. They wanted a report for each intersection. And I'm like, just see the same comment for X, Y, and Z intersections. So apparently there's a backup, but then they'll give you a case number and you can follow up to see what the progress is.
Thank you very much. I see Doris's hand still up. Is that because she forgot to take it down? We have 5 minutes left for this discussion.
Bill?
Yes.
Bill? Hello?
Go ahead, Doris.
Okay. So I did have it up a second time because of Barbara's comment. What I can say is that in Arlington County, this has become an issue, and I'm on the Disability Advisory Commission. We've had a couple of presentations about audible traffic signals, and the county has come to us and said, well, the federal access board gives localities and states the choice of the type of signal they're going to use. So Arlington County, despite the objections of the Disability Advisory Commission and the blind people in the Disability Advisory Commission especially, have decided they're going to change all of their signals from speaking word, you know, providing direction about where to cross and where not to cross, signals to PAWS signals, new PAWS signals. And we've raised a number of concerns about that. So in Arlington County, it is the county's decision, and it appears to us that they may have already gotten the go-ahead to go with changing that. And then up where I am on 50, they were installing, 50 is supposed to be VDOT maintained, but I guess the Arlington stops are, because I'm at an Arlington stop, the Arlington stops are being done by VDOT together with the county. Then in Fairfax County, 90% of the stops, the signals and the stops and the sidewalks are related to bus, are controlled by VDOT. So there's a mixed bag. In Alexandria, they're controlled by the city as well as in Arlington. So the problem is that VDOT has adopted certain codes that allow them to optionally change the consistent standard that we all thought was going to be there, telling you which intersection was now walkable and which intersection you shouldn't cross. And so that contributes to all of the confusion for the pedestrian, particularly blind pedestrians.
10 seconds, Doris.
Here in Virginia. And maybe we should be going to the access board and telling them, you should take away this option, because I know why it's there. It's for the rural localities, but we aren't the rural localities.
Thank you. We're right on schedule. Tino, you can have 1 minute if you want. I see your hand is up.
Yes. You know, I have photos of bikers running red lights. I have a photo of a biker on a sidewalk in D.C. drinking while pedaling his bike. You know, that's very frustrating. On the other hand, I don't see any way we can stop the building of bike lanes, but at least we can go forward. And Patrick and Tom Mangrum and Philippa have volunteered to join me in trying to talk to bikers through their associations about the danger it is for us who have disabilities or who are seniors about this. Education isn't always the full answer, but we got to start somewhere, and there's no stopping the building of these bike lanes, so let's educate the bikers. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. That's really good. The one thing I might suggest for future meetings, both bus rail and for the full AAC, is, and Patrick, you are on the RAC, your advisor from the board, Dr. Helfer, Brianna, is in Arlington government working on some of these very issues with the locals and inviting her to come to any of the three meetings to talk about floating bus stops. We also have another member of the board who is in charge of transportation for the District of Columbia. And we always have an open invitation for her to come back. And again, make sure that we put floating bus stops on that agenda. And I will ask Carol, is it possible to get someone from the Department of Transportation, federal transportation, to come talk to us about that? Because they are interested in pedestrian safety. They have a whole pot of money for that. And this is something that is critical. And since they are located here in the District of Columbia, having them come to one of our meetings and talk to us about pedestrian safety.
We can certainly
invite them.
We can certainly invite them.
Thank you. Let's go to the top. Because that's with everything else, from stop signs to traffic lights to priority signaling. When we're dealing with states and jurisdictions and individuals, it's good to get the feds involved. And I know in Fairfax, Jerry Connolly is very involved in this sort of stuff at the federal level. And possibly having that discussion go a step above. Because I know even the folks that have come to us have said, gee, we really need a national standard. And I can't argue with that, but that would be great if there's some way we could arrange that. Okay, I think we are moving on. It's 6:10 to the AAC bylaws, enforcement and modifications for the committee discussion. Anu, you have sent everybody a copy of our current bylaws.
Yes, sir.
And hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to read through them.
Right. Can I begin, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just a real quick, brief statement is that we heard the call and we will be adhering to the bylaws as it relates to membership. I will say that maybe this is fortuitous of some kind or a blessing that we don't have to get into any real sentimental situation, because we have four members who are up for 2022 this year. And none of them are subject to the term limit, just so happens. So that takes care of that kind of emotional situation, but all four of them are likely not to return anyway. And then we have a fifth who submitted his resignation to you last week. So we will be following the bylaws moving forward, but we will be replacing up to five members this year, and we will be doing so within the guides of the bylaws. But just for the record, at this point, it does not appear that any replacement will be as a result of being subjected to the term limits.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That answers that question. I think one of the other discussions that we have had has been attendance at the meetings and participation. And I know I have heard from my first assistant chair, co-chair, about some people that we don't see. And sometimes we see them, but we never hear from them. And so, Tino, I see your hand raised.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. I'm sorry to not, I didn't mean to interrupt Tino. I apologize. but Paul also has his hand up. Just wanted to make sure you know about it.
Thank you. So Tino, go ahead, and then we'll go to Paul.
You just made my point. There have been instances, no one has kept track, except that they appear in the minutes if you want to count them up. But it's evident to me that there have been some members who have not been coming, certainly not been coming consistently. I'm glad that Christian is going to come up with some solutions and identify where vacancies are. Thank you, Christian.
Thank you. Paul, you're on the clock.
Hey, as the former facilitator or chair of the bylaws, and hopefully if we go through this again that I can pass, hopefully someone will have the energy and wants to take on this task. I just want to point out to people, since this last review and revision, which was long and thorough the last time in 2014, when it came to a final vote in 2015, that it does say in the bylaws, just about every 5 years, there should be some type of review. And of course, that time is well past, because we should have reviewed it. That 50-year mark was 2020, but of course the pandemic came and everything else. So I'm just putting it out there that it is due for a review, as it states in the bylaws, for every 5 years for any changes. And to Ms. Rush, when she asked about the, there should have been in there a requirement about any new members interested should attend at least to, you know, main or subcommittee meetings. I know we expressed that interest to have that in there, but that is not in the current bylaws. I will say that, what we put in as a draft probably might be different after a final review by the WMATA attorney and or the board of directors. So we may have discussed it and had it in our draft. I'm just putting it out there. But what comes out in the end after we do all work is subject to review by the board of directors and review by the WMATA attorney that reviews it for final preparation. And that's all I'm going to say on that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And again, I think one of the major things this time is it has been so easy to attend now that we are meeting on Zoom. Whenever, if we should, go back to L'Enfant Plaza, we might want to revisit it. Or if we go to our combined meetings of both Zoom and in person. So point is very well taken. Carol, you look as though you have something to add. Okay.
Chair Posner.
I'm sorry, Chair Posner. I was reading something on the screen, and that's why it looked like I had something to add. Sorry.
That's okay. You're forgiven. But Tino still has his hand up, and I see Denise. So let's go to Denise and then to Tino. Denise, you're on the clock. You're muted.
Okay, this is Ms. Rush. I remember at the last meeting or previous meeting that we were going to receive an Excel sheet or a documentation of some type of the attendance from January 2021 to January 2022. And I don't open up use my machine every day. So did you all receive it and I didn't? Hello?
Well, I think the question is, Anu, did you send out the attendance roster? I think that would be the...
Okay, so I would make sure that it gets sent out tonight. If before 8 p.m., everyone should have it. I will make sure I'll send it out by 8 p.m. tonight.
Also, my question, Paul, you know the bylaws very well. aren't you supposed to at least attend the AAC meeting and one subcommittee?
So in the bylaws, like I just previously stated in my statement, because I did look through it with a fine tooth comb, because I knew that was going to be your question. We discussed it and that was part of our draft. But like I said, that is not in the final bylaws, because like I said, it is subject to review by the WMATA attorney to legal correctness and the board. So it is not in there.
Okay. I'm not talking about a requirement before you become a member. I'm talking about once you become a member, you're expected that.
So,
and you're saying that's not in the bylaws?
No. So that was before. So let me correct myself. So before becoming a member, that's, I know we discussed it, but that's not part of that bylaws. But as a member, you are required, it does state very clearly, you know, you need to attend at least one, the main meeting every month, and at least one subcommittee member, one subcommittee meeting every month. So two meetings a month at the minimum.
Yes, that's what I'm concerned about. And I think once we get the readout of the statement from January 2021 to 2022, that is not happening. And then that's the concern, besides what the previously, before you apply, that you attend. We need to review that also. But the requirement, once you are, have accepted to be on the AAC, because everything that goes on in the subcommittees is brought forth to the AAC to vote on it. And if you haven't been to the AAC meeting nor the subcommittee meetings, how can you vote? Thank you.
Thank you. Tina?
Denise makes an excellent point. But why not have the matrix or the chart show not just calendar year 2021, but up until, say, February or March of 2022. The other thing is, Christian has mentioned that there is one resignation. Do we have to wait until we have a new charter in order to fill the resignation or fill any other slots? Do we have to wait until we have a new charter? That's my question.
Good question, Tino. Technically, no, but I hate to go political, but we're so close to the general election, if you will, for AAC members, which is supposed to be in June. It's just like when you do the regular elections. If you're far away, you have a special appointment, but if you're close up, you just generally use the election that's coming up. In this case, we have a board appointment process that's coming up. And by the time we get the paperwork done for this person to replace Elver, who's the person who resigned, we would be actually working to do the others as well. What we could do if, I mean,
special election. We could, that is in the bylaws, but that takes a process versus what Mr. Blake is saying.
Right. And so I would just ask if we focus on the non-bylaws recruitment effort that Access is going to do, which Ms. Rush was somewhat alluding to, which is we're asking people to attend an AAC meeting and at least one subcommittee meeting so that they can see the process and also be informed of the commitment that is required, whereas they're sitting there that one time or two times, this is going to be at least twice monthly. So if we can just get through that process, it is my commitment and the commitment of the team to try to have the full allotment of members on board by the September meeting, which then incorporates the recruitment process, some meetings that the people can attend, as well as all the board board work that's required to get a person appointed to the AAC.
Thank you. And in an emergency, we have made requests and they have been granted. And one of the things that we have traditionally done is there is a list of people that are good and eligible and willing. And so when there is a vacancy in the middle of a term or in the middle of the year and we're not close to a deadline, we have the ability to bring someone from that list to the committee. If the committee approves it, we then make a request of the board to make an out-of-sequence approval. And that has been done in the past. In fact, we did that with Rico to fill a slot for the district. And I see Darnese's hand up, and you haven't spoken yet. So Denise, Darnese, please.
1 second. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
I've been remiss because it's been my understanding since I've been on the board that you needed to attend at least two, the AAC major meeting and whatever subcommittee you belonged on. And then if you were also on any other subcommittee of your particular committee, then you would also serve as that. But I don't know whether or not I'm eligible to continue or not, but I would like to. But I had been remiss and I had been ill. But I would like either Paul or Denise to call me and let me know what they need from me. I think I'm available at this time.
Darnese, thank you. And typically what we have done because of the physicality of our group, we all have disabilities, most of us. And so there have been health issues. There have been travel issues. There have been family issues. And within reason, when approached, that's been taken into account. And no one, to my knowledge, has been removed for missing meetings because of a family crisis or a health issue or traveling to an international meeting. One of our former members, who's no longer with us, on this committee, did that. So I think right now, as Mr. Blake has pointed out, for those folks that are up for renewal, they can apply for renewal in the normal course of events. So I think we're in pretty good shape. And I think we've covered everything that we needed to cover on the bylaws since we're not rewriting them now. But I would suggest that for our next meeting in May, that anyone that would like to make suggested amendments, changes to either the verbiage of the bylaws or the enforcement of the bylaws, because by then we will have gotten the chart of what the attendance record is for everybody, that we table this discussion until next month's meeting and take concepts of amendments and enforcement. And can I have a second to that?
Second. Adding the friendly amendment that you may want to consider a work group for this, because this is a, if y'all go through this process, a large task. Trust me.
Yes, we know that. And Patrick has already informed me that he would resign rather than participate in this again. So let's put it on the table until next month and think about who would like to be part of a work group and also have the suggestions as to what we want to do. Because hopefully as we get closer to the summer, we'll have some idea as to how our meetings are going to go, be it in person or via Zoom or meetings. So.
Bill, Irene.
Yes.
Yeah. Just putting on the record the idea that as we revise these bylaws for the next 5 years that we might want to put in there a clause that would cover the addition of a member representing Loudoun County as, you know, the Silver Line Phase 2 is you know, coming, hopefully, to its conclusion, and maybe even think about at least putting one person from Loudoun County on right now, either in a full role or an advisory role, to have that voice out there right now.
Thank you. Again, I will refer that to the board of directors because the requirement of representation by jurisdiction in the original documents accepted by the board is by jurisdiction, Maryland, DC, and Virginia.
That's six, six, and six, plus the two from AFA.
Yes, exactly. And so again, adding Loudoun County would be like adding another jurisdiction when in fact it is part of Virginia.
And I'm sure Mr. Loudoun would be.
Yes, I
am sure the representative
Loudoun will go with it. Yes, that discussion needs to be made. And it's a point we have had in finding members from Virginia. There's a lot of jurisdictions in Virginia. And sometimes, you know, we said, well, we need someone else from Arlington or we need someone else from Fairfax or whatever. But I think that's something we need to discuss with the board. And that can be on the agenda for the May meeting. And Tina, one last shot before we move on to the budget.
Yeah, just a question for clarification. Christian mentioned that whatever vacancies we have, we'll have a full board in September. Does that mean before September, the new charter will have been worked out and approved?
Christian? Well, let me just make sure I'm hearing what the conversation is. Because we actually just updated the bylaws, I want to say no more than 2 years ago. So I'm not sure we need a new bylaws at this point, unless the AAC believes there's one. But we know, but what I'm mainly speaking of is not changing the bylaws, Tino. And again, I don't have any opinion on that. That's your bylaws. You guys can change it if you want. I'm talking about making sure that there are actually 20 appointed members approved by the or appointed by the board as we seek that first meeting after the summer break.
Yes, thank you so much. You. I don't think anybody wants to rewrite the bylaws.
Mr.
We're talking about discussing enforcement of the existing bylaws or tweaking some individual comments, such as expanding our interpretation of who represents Virginia.
Could I just ask you a question? Mr. Blake, a question very quick.
This is
Very quick. Is there any provision if we don't have the full complement of members that members who are phasing out? Maybe asked to stay in order to keep that complement full and not be at a deficiency?
Steve, they are always asked. When your term is up, everyone is asked, do they want to reapply? And so it's up to them. Now, if it's someone who has never attended a meeting during their 2 years on or their 1 year on, you might not ask them to just reapply, but if they reapply, they'd have to explain why they never showed up, yet they want to be on again. So everyone has a chance. And we haven't enforced the term limits at this point because it's a moving target. But anyway, we've spent a lot of time on this. We're 5 minutes into discussion of the budget. So let's move on with the budget discussion. And what I'd like to do for the budget discussion, the budget has been passed. I will point out that as with the last 2 years, this is a floating budget. Because as with all budgets, a budget that is balanced has to be passed and approved in order for WMATA to start applying for grants and for federal funding. And so that's done. But it is not passed on stone. They are not the holy tablets from Sinai. They are flexible. They are going to depend on a lot of things that are going on. The 7,000 series right now, they're not even thinking about them for 90 days. That's 3 months. Silverline expansion, that's still up in the air. It's moved out till July, and I think that's being very optimistic. No one knows what's happening with COVID and new guidelines as to ridership, because how many are coming back to work for the federal government and for the private sector? And there'll be a new GM in July. So we have a document, but it's flexible. It's going to be flexible as it has been the last few years to maintain sustainability, depending upon funding. And again, a lot of the funding was anticipated by bills that have gone through Congress and money that should be available, but a lot of that money as yet has not been appropriated by the Congress. So until it is actually appropriated, that may not be there. So just to point out to everybody, we do have a budget document. The good news was there is the promise of extending the COVID programs to increase ridership that were put into place by the current GM, Mr. Wiedefeld. The question tonight for Mr. Blake will be the effect on Metro access. And that is with the continuation of the weekend flat fares, $2 on bus rail, and the after 9 o'clock implementation of flat fares on bus rail. Will Metro Access continue to do that? The other question that I have, the great thing that Mr. Blake and Metro Access has done is they have been very flexible to the original guideline that the routes have to actually be running in order for Metro Access to be running. But during COVID, what has happened is if the route was there, even if there were no buses or trains running due to construction, no trains, et cetera, Metro Access was available 24/7. And so the question for Mr. Blake is, one, will that be continued through the early part of the budget, so long as money permits it? And then the other question is there still an opportunity, as we have requested, that the flat fare be sort of a pilot that may at some point become official? And so let me turn it over to Mr. Blake.
Okay. Thank you, sir. So, Mr. Chairman, so on a couple of points, let me start with the service area. So the service area point you raise is that when fixed route services, Metro Bus and Metro Rail reduces its service hours and times. In the past, we always had this big meeting. We had to have Mr. Hamry come in and we had to go through all of those type of discussions and how many people will be impacted, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the good news is that, and I just have to say this board, and I'm talking about the board as a body, because individuals have come and gone, but this board, at least in my time, has just been tremendously supportive of Metro Access in terms of what I've proposed, and we don't get everything we want, but that's the nature of life. But to the service area that we're operating under now, which is providing, as we say, in the hours, nearly 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a very enlarged service area as compared to fixed route service, will not only be in place through this budget year, it will be in place through next budget year. And we haven't even begun talking about next year's budget.
Yes.
So that's an awesome victory for paratransit providers around this region. It's a continuation, actually, of a victory that you all secured. And I was very happy and proud to make the case that this is a good thing. Will it be this way forever? Again, we're not going to go that far, but at least for the next 2 years, the remainder of this calendar, I mean, of this fiscal year, next fiscal year, and the year after that, our service area and hours will not change. What will change with the service area, of course, that means if there's any shrinkage, we will not shrink. But when there is the Silver Line phase two that opens up, this service area will enlarge. So no place would be taken away, but there'll be new areas of the service area available to Metro Access customers. So that's a huge victory. That's very significant. I can tell you, I mean, maybe if you go to like what I call those two light towns and places like that around the country, perhaps, but I can't think of, or I certainly can't find any major urban, suburban paratransit area service that has a service area that much greater than its fixed route service for all eligible customers. So that's a great thing. And I'm very happy that the board has agreed to allow this to extend. And we're just gonna keep rolling that way. And that's just a great thing. And as far as the flat fare, yes, flat fares will remain flat on the weekends. There is a proposal to have a flat fare after 9:30 on bus and rail, or on rail. And that would make all Metro Access fares flat after 9:30 as well, which would only leave Monday through Friday from their morning to 9:30 p.m. as the time with a variable fare. And again, there's still discussions internally about that possibility of a pilot or something to that effect. I can't make any promises tonight or any projections, but Metro Access is enjoying the flat fare on the weekends. And when the new fiscal year comes in and the flat fare comes in after 9:30, Metro Access will enjoy that flat fare as well. And just in terms of the overall service, there always will be challenges. I'm never going to say anything is perfect. We know that's not the case. But we're going to continue to try to plan and be prepared. And as I always like to say, you know, affectionately with you all, trying to be business-minded, more business than a social worker, so I can make smart decisions that positively benefit your lives. So some things are going to have to be done so that we can have the resources to sustain the program and the service to the greatest extent possible, to the greatest number of customers possible, to the greatest extent in terms of service area and hours possible. So one of the things that's in this budget, we have a budget next year, we've budgeted for 340,000 abilities ride trips. That's just under 30,000 abilities ride trips a month. And you know, all of those trips are free of charge. So that's another fair effort where we're trying to do in reducing the impact of cost to our customers. Will we use all 340,000? We don't know. It depends on demand for Metro Access. It depends on how well our companies recruit drivers, how many Metro Access vehicles we can put on the road, because we've got to protect that safety net, as I've been saying. And I know how some people feel about that concept, but that's what we're doing. We may not use all 340,000, or we actually can end up using more than 340,000. The business decisions in terms of reacting to the demand for customers, reacting to the availability of our service providers, reacting to the effectiveness of our call center, it all plays a part in determining how many of those abilities ride trips we use. And also one other thing impacts it tremendously is just the availability, the reliability, and the continued commitment of the companies in the abilities ride program to safety, accessibility, and quality service. So all of those play into a part, but I'm saying this again, I know some may have different viewpoints, and that's fair, but this board for now literally the third year in a row has been just phenomenal to the Metro Access and disability community at large. Of course, you continue your free fares on fixed route services, reduce fares for customers who don't qualify for Metro Access. And again, enough funding to protect the safety net of paratransit. So this is 3 years in a row. The budget has been very kind to paratransit. And we just, I'm just thankful for the board and my colleagues in budget and who work with us in developing and securing a very healthy budget for the next fiscal year.
Thank you. That is terrific. And I will let everybody know they will get a monthly reminder when we report with a smile on our face to do that. And again, sustainable, sustainable, sustainable. And the thing to point out to them on a monthly basis, which I try to do, is the number of rides. And that's critical because during COVID, ridership has been low for everyone. So we move. I see two hands. There is Denise and Patrick. So Queen, you're on the clock.
I knew that was coming first.
Denise, you're on mute. Unmute yourself. Go.
This is Ms. Rush. At the Metro Access subcommittee meeting, there was a motion to bring forth and discuss with the entire AAC board what Mr. Torres discussed or presented, and we haven't talked about that.
Yes. I didn't because Mr. Torres chose not to present it to the board. And we have basically put a motion together that's very similar to what he wants and what we have requested of the board in previous meetings is a flat fare that is approvable by the FTA and is fiscally sustainable 24/7 between $0 and $7 per trip. And so we've already done that. And we had a fairly busy schedule this month. And I thought it had already been discussed. And since the budget's already out, and if we are going to continue in our monthly presentations to the board, talking about flat fares, which I plan to do this month, and if you all want it, next month also. Flat fares 24/7, it has to be FTA approvable. It has to be fiscally sustainable. And the price we feel should be between zero, free ride, which is his proposal, and our current maximum, which is $650. So Denise, that's where we are, and that's our discussion.
Okay, and who do we talk to or pull their ear about if the buses go to the localities and during the week why they can't be extended to the weekend, where people can go to church and go shopping and what they go during the week. Who do we really talk to about that to make sure that, why can't they go on Saturday and especially Sunday?
Well, Mr. Blake is shaking his head because he is already doing that for us.
Okay.
So right. I'll let him remind you that he's already doing this. So thank him.
So you're saying that we can't go to Walmart on the weekends, but now we can?
No, so let's clarify a couple of things. The current service area does extend beyond where there is fixed route service, both on the weekends and the weekdays, but it's not an unlimited service area. So we had to find points in the area, and we have. So yeah, are there still some customers who do not have access to a location on the weekends? Yes, there are some, but that will be the case unless we extend the service area to Baltimore. I mean, there's going to be places where people want to go that's beyond the service area. So at some point you have to cut it off somewhere. So
yeah, but it's
So here's my question. Here's my point to you, though. So some of that is occurring. There are some people whose churches, dialysis centers, and other areas are not accessible by fixed route service on the weekend, but because of our current Metro Access service area, they still can travel there on the weekend. There are some customers whose churches and other places are not accessible by public transit on the weekend, and they can't because that's outside of this map we have. Now, to your question is, who can we talk to? You talk to your local elected officials in your particular county or area, because they're the ones who can either A, come to Metro and say, we will pay more money for more service on the weekends where there is no service, or B, they can operate their own local operated service that Metro Access will then also recognize as part of an enlarged service area. So it begins at the local level where there is no service on the weekends to ask them to step up either by funding more service through Metro or funding or providing service directly themselves.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'll also point out that I received notice that Arlington County is reviewing their STAR service. And it used to be great, but it ain't going to be great anymore if they go through with what they're saying. So we need to pay attention at the local level what the jurisdictions are doing, because money makes the world go round. And in Virginia, the governor is removing the grocery tax, which is what pays a lot of the transportation bill at the local jurisdictions. So don't sleep, or you're going to wake up very surprised. Patrick, you've been very patient.
Thank you, Bill. Just a question or a clarification. With the federal budget passing, I think it was sometime in early March, didn't that free up all the appropriation transportation money that was going through the infrastructure bill?
No.
I think it did, actually.
The budget does not include appropriations. It still needs to be appropriated. It's a different committee.
I'm confused. The budget was passed and signed.
That's a budget. That's not right. An appropriation. It's what we would call an unfunded mandate. The money has to be found. And the money can be found either through the Appropriations Committee in the House first, and then the Senate, or by the president using executive powers to take money from somebody like defense and give it to somebody like transit. But right now, nobody in Maryland, Virginia or the district has gotten a check, the cash. It's our government, love it or leave it.
So, okay, so none of the infrastructure transportation money is even though the budget was signed and all the federal government has money for the 30th of September.
The last gift of $120 million is in hand. They've got the money. They have the coins. But the rest of it is still waiting appropriations. That check has arrived.
All right.
Okay, Patrick, thank you so much. And it's 6:55, so Doris is the last person with her hand up before we go to the bus rail subcommittee. So Doris, you're on the clock.
Okay, just one question and one comment. The question is, am I correct that what we're looking at in the federal budget is primarily capital funds and not necessarily operating funds? And then the comment is that the changes being proposed for STAR, the STAR service, is, I think, likely, from what I've seen of those changes, likely to put more people onto Metro Access rather than the other way around. So it might be something to think about that they're, that probably the county is going to have to be spending more and there'll be more, have to be appropriated for rides from Arlington County residents.
Yes, Doris, thank you. Well said. Actually, part of the budget money for capital improvements is the PREA program, which are the matching funds. But there also was a lot of money to FTA, which was going to be used for local projects, pilot projects, as well as infrastructure. And that would include better roads in rural areas, better transportation in rural areas, better pedestrian safety. And so they're two different pots of money and they can be given out in various ways. And one of the reasons that WMATA had to get their budget passed and approved was they can now apply for a lot of that money that the feds have out there for physical improvements as well as service improvements. So it's still a moving target as things move along. Now, what will happen with STAR is, as they reduce their service, and one of the things that they're removing that I really dislike is will call. Because one of the great things for STAR was, if you had a doctor's appointment, or if you're coming into an airport or a bus terminal or a railroad, Amtrak, you could call and they would send the car to pick you up. They want to do away with that so that you have to book your ride in advance. And if your plane is late, your train is late, your bus is late, you then have to call, and it may take anywhere up to 3 or 5 hours before they get somebody to pick you up. And you're correct, there will probably be reduced ridership on STAR, and so they will be saving money on STAR, but then their percentage contribution to WMATA, Metro Access, will go back up. And so basically the reason STAR was so successful was that Arlington had the smallest jurisdictional contribution to WMATA of all the jurisdictions. And that was because of STAR. Well, guess what? If they go through this and their ridership goes down, they'll be saving money on STAR, but they may be paying it to WMATA. And that's something that you're on their advisory committee. I am a resident. Patrick, you are on the rack and you can talk to one of their associate chair people. And that's where we lobby and point out to them that they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And it may be better not to do that. So, good questions, great discussions. Tino, where are you? You've disappeared.
I'm here.
Okay, ready to roll, bus rail subcommittee.
Okay, you're talking about the minutes, right?
Well, the report.
Yeah.
What did you guys do this month? You didn't just sit around and eat sandwiches.
Not the sandwiches that we used to get at WMATA. I'm reporting on the draft minutes, which we would actually approve next meeting. But in terms of the draft minutes, we talked last meeting about the platform improvement projects. And in terms of that, Denise and Philippa asked if there are going to be wheelchair-equipped shuttles. And Philippa asked if they're going to be staff who's identifiable to help out. And the answer by staff was yes in both cases. We also talked about, well, we heard about the station planning projects in Brooklyn, Navy Yard, and Cleveland Park. We also talked again about floating bus stops activities. And I do have one modification, which I'll pass on to Anu, and we can discuss it at the next meeting. Okay. let's see. In terms of floating bus stops, as I mentioned earlier in this meeting, Patrick and Tom Mangrum and Philippa have volunteered when we go out and do some education to the public at large through the bike associations. One of them is a national one, I think, that's right here. Susan Crawford was a guest who came in, and she talked about the inconsistency between what the U.S. Department of Transportation put out and what we've been talking about. And I'll talk to Steve. I think he needs to clarify a little bit on what he talked about regarding motorized versus non-motorized scooters. We had a very nice presentation by Steve with a few dozen pictures about accessible buses and trains throughout the U.S. as well as even in Australia. And then we adjourned. And so that was a report of what the minutes were in draft form. I'm sorry that I missed the discussion, as Patrick did, regarding the floating bus stops, but I'll check again. I'll look at the, maybe if there are minutes of that, I'll try and report on that too. But that's it. So Paul, your turn.
Thank you. Paul, take it.
Hey, hello everybody. The Metro Access Subcommittee report here. Let me just bring it up on my screen as I see it. Okay, so at last month's meeting, we had a discussion about an abilities right update and for Mr. Blake and what that entails with the companies and where we are. We talked about wheelchair accessible vehicles. That point was brought up by Ms. Rush. And we had a discussion about that as it relates to abilities ride. We also discussed the shared ride update, which again was provided by Mr. Blake, that shared rides are up to about close to 7%. And we're taking this month by month as he's using the strategy that we're using right now as we're dealing with this ever-evolving pandemic. That there could be some possible shared rides, even though they're kept at minimum and there's been still low ridership. And we're going to take this on a month-to-month basis, as we will get a report about this later this month again. We also discussed the GPS system update from Ms. Williams Hall as to when we're going to get the Garmin devices, that it's taking some time given things with the pandemic and, you know, everything else. And we also discussed some call center operations and procedures, and the staff has been, Metrax's staff has been very forthcoming about, you know, procedures that may have not been followed and taking very aggressive corrective action to make sure those incidents don't happen again. I know for this committee, for this, our subcommittee, we are discussing this month on the agenda, the mask mandate, whether or not it's going to be extended on Metro Access or Metro. We'll hear more views about that later this month, and more things on Abilities Ride, and also, also things on the mask mandate. That and a few other items. And also, I would like to add an additional item. I know long ago we used to hear reports, at least quarterly, from Metro in terms of research. They used to poll Metro Access riders on various things about service, their opinions about how the service is going. And I know that kind of probably went away during the pandemic or some time ago before that. But we would like to see that come back again. So anew, there will be an amended agenda with that topic. Well, while the people from that research team don't have to come, but I would, well, we as a committee would like to have a discussion of bringing them back if that's feasible. And some of the things we would like to see come back, because we found that information that we had from customers that was done through, you know, focus groups, things like that via phone. In this case, could be done, you know, possibly, obviously in person may not be the most feasible thing right now, but possibly, you know, by Zoom, if we can do that again. And some of the topics we would like for Metro research team that partnered with Metro Access staff and customers to do again, because that information was very useful to get an idea of what the customers feel about the service. And I think those things are appropriate and should continue. I know it went on sort of a hiatus for a couple of years, but we do want to see it return. So do expect to see amended agenda, having a discussion with that with Metro Access staff and seeing what they can do to revive that again. anything to add on, Denise? Or any questions from committee members?
Yes, we discussed, or we asked about the sensitivity training from each.
Oh, yes, I can add that to the agenda too, an update on that. So there'll be two items that will be updating anew. Mm-hmm. And you should see that by tonight, a revised agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, questions to my report? If not, Phil, it goes back to you.
Thank you. Well, we're doing really well. We're open for public comment. Anu, do we have anything from the public right now?
Chair Posner, we did not receive any public comments via email or phone messages. And thus far, I have received no chat messages informing me of any public comments either. Mr. Blake just raised his hand up. So after he makes his comment, I will share information how people can provide us with their public comments. Mr. Blake.
Thank you. And also remind everybody of May the 3rd, and I have received your email, which has the attendance roster on it. So Mr. Blake.
Yeah, so real quick, during the Metro Access subcommittee meeting, during which Mr. Torres was presenting his, his presentation of the Vision Zero plan, there was some discussions, and I tried to address every point just for the record, just for clarity, not to debate, but I tried to address every point. One I didn't address immediately, because I like to have my facts right there with me, were some concerns raised about the continued concerns about the accessibility of the WMATA website. So I did want to just provide this as kind of old business, new business. We are still utilizing the report that you as a committee and individual stakeholders like Mr. Torres contributed to from the Results One consultant. One improvement that we're trying to make, and again, we want to hear from individuals, and I'll elaborate a little more on that. But one of the things that the Results One recommended was better contrast of the web pages. The standard we found is 4.5 to 1. Upon testing IT and WMATA, we believe that we're about 0.8% better than that, at about 4.54 to 1 now after some adjustments. That's one thing that the Results One said for people with lower vision or vision challenges, that the contrast can be improved, and the IT team has worked on that. Another thing was the ability of the headers to be read through screen readers. Again, through testing, we're finding that with JAWS, at least, that the JAWS is reading our screen headings now. That's another improvement that the Results One team recommended. Again, your feedback is always welcome, and information from you is welcome as well. And what I want to build upon this and say, as you've been seeing, my approach is to take information, recommendations, and use them and give you feedback and follow-up. We're not going to be in a situation where the great work we had under David Schaefer, and then we had other great work under the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. We all have different, some of us are rooting for North Carolina tonight, others are rooting for Kansas. We all have our favorites, we all have people we don't like. I don't want to get back into a case where folks are scrutinizing the individuals and scrutinizing the companies or whomever is doing the work more than we're focused on making improvements. That's another reason I've always talked about, after we do a solicitation, if there's going to be one, I would give you a summary of the Results One work, perhaps not the whole report, because again, it's not about Results One. It's about what we're trying to do. And what I've also asked individuals, instead of focusing on scrutinizing whether you like David Schaefer, you like Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, or you didn't like them, and getting into all those type of less than productive dialogue, I've asked individuals, you give me your assessment, give me your report, and I will work from that as well, whether it's comprehensive or it's even to the micro level of a particular word on a particular page. To his credit, Ansel Torres has provided me with a very detailed report, and we're going to be taking points by point. We like to, like with a lot of things, we like to take the low-hanging fruit first, and then you know, engage in some of the more challenging aspects later. And what I've committed to Mr. Torres for his thoughtful report and detailed report is, like we're doing with the Results One report, we're going to take points by points and provide updates as successes occur. And so I'm gonna provide those updates to Mr. Torres directly, but we'll also be providing updates through the AAC meetings as well. I'm committed to 508 compliance. I mean, we believe, based on testing, the standards, that we're meeting 508 for the record. Are there ways to improve, and are things can be better? We'll always say, yes, things can get better. And if you give us recommendations or point out specific flaws or shortcomings, we will be committed, remain committed to addressing those. So I just wanted to not leave that as an open item, just in case it was on anybody's mind, why I didn't address that specifically 2 weeks ago. But we remain committed to not only meeting 508 standards, but exceeding them where we can. And anyone who shares specific aspects of the website they believe needs improvement, fixing, remediation, you let us know. We will be addressing it to the greatest extent we can possible, in as short a time as we can possible. So I just wanted to kind of wrap up our follow-up discussion following Mr. Torres's presentation of the Vision Zero plan from the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, and let everyone know, open here during the meetings or directly to me. You have website issues, concerns, please feel free to contact Access, and we'll continue our work in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Denise and then Darnese.
Chair Posner, this is Zenu. Marcy Goldstein also wants to make some comments.
Okay, Marcy, you're on the clock.
Okay, I have a quick question. Does anybody know Christian or Andrew, if and when you're going to reestablish the travel training? I've gotten some questions about that.
Yes, great question, Marcy. We're absolutely committed to travel training and reinstituting it as quickly as possible. What we're doing right now is we're waiting for the mass mandate of the federal government for public transportation to be determined one way or the other. Come the 18th, we should know where the federal government is going with the mass mandate. If it's not extended, that gives us one pathway. If it is extended, doesn't mean we can't proceed with travel training, giving the medicines, the vaccines, et cetera, and just our knowledge of how to protect ourselves. But the pandemic has put a temporary stop to the travel training. I'm almost certain that by June, probably sooner, but definitely by June, we will have some form of travel training reinstituted for the general public. But let's talk more about it during the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, because if I'm not mistaken, the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting is on the 18th. So that could probably be a very informative day that we can then help begin making some decisions as to a host of things, including travel training.
And along those lines, what is going to happen to the contracts of the organizations that were contracted with WMATA to do travel training?
Yeah, we still have the contracts. That was a group, unfortunately, that was impacted. There's no other way I can say it. They were impacted by the pandemic. Make no mistake about it. But there wasn't a whole lot we could do. But the contracts are still there. So, and also we also have in-house staff as well that are capable and talented and certified travel trainers. So the business side of it is there. We just need to make sure that it's safe and that we're following that we're establishing the appropriate protocols given this, what we hope would be a post-pandemic period.
When you go back to some sort of travel training, will those contracts be extended beyond because they haven't done it 2 years?
The contracts will be in place. I think that's the best I can say. The contracts will be in place, and that company and the individuals and how we're going about it, they will be there. That's the best I can say at this moment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I do see that Darnese Bush has her hand up, and so does Denise Rush.
Okay, this is Ms. Rush. Uh-huh. I know I say it often. On May the 3rd, can we have at least 8 people down at the WMATA building,
okay,
checking out what they want us to check out. How many have we already received anew?
Including yourself, it's 2 at this point, Ms. Rush.
Yeah, well, that's 2 we always get. Can we get some more, please?
We would love, and since you have asked about this, let me also give information to everyone on this phone call, on this meeting. What Ms. Rush is referring to is the site visit to test the fare boxes on Metro buses. Last year, we had invited the AAC members and other stakeholders to test the location of the fare boxes. At this point, we are inviting the group to test the fare boxes. We are going to have the fare boxes on our Metro buses, and the buses will be situated in front of the JGB building. That will be on May 3rd, and I believe that's a Tuesday, between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. In case of severe weather, the rain date will be May 5th. So that is what Ms. Rush is referring to, and that is what I was also going to share before we ended the meeting. So we would like for all the AAC members, but we invited the AAC members to participate. The more the merrier. And thus far we have 2 responses, but I'm hoping that in the coming days we will get more responses informing who would be attending.
Thank you.
May 3rd, right?
May 3rd, yes.
It's the day after our AAC meeting. So that's
all right.
Good.
So Bernice, you can count me in. Okay.
Well, that Ms. Rush, that's number 3rd right there. So thank you, Paul.
Yes, it's really important that that this community participates, because our program, the Office of ADA Policy and Planning, has been advocating for easier to use fare boxes, and we really need feedback from the disability community. And otherwise, we're gonna get stuck with things that you may not like. And it's because you're having an opportunity to participate. So it's really important to see you there.
And just to reinforce, you would see weekly emails from me about this as a reminder. Darnius, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Basically, my concern is the 1-hour turnaround between Metro Access and the return trip, the initial trip and the return trip. Basically, when you make your reservations, I saw, you know, the number of people that you had that didn't know about it or whatever.
Would be impacted by it, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's a confusion based on that, because it depends on where you're going. Because some people go just to their neighborhood or whatever, and I don't think it's fair if you're just going, say, 10 blocks. And you have to wait a whole hour for, you know, to schedule your return. You know, I mean, it's really bad for senior citizens. It's really bad for people with many disabilities and all of that to have to wait because there are no benches. There are no places for them to sit, you know, so I think maybe it should be based on how many miles it is in between or something like that, because just to say a blanket statement that it should be at least 60 minutes in between is a problem.
So, and I hear you, and I respect the position. Now, just so we're clear, this isn't anything new. In fact, this one, This one, if I'm not mistaken, is what we call BC. This was before Chris Blake even came. So this has been around for many, many years. The only difference that has happened is that we did not have a technological way to enforce this rule to customers who book online. So there were some customers who were getting the benefit of not having to adhere to this rule where most other customers did. But here's where, so Ms. Bush and committee members, we're gonna keep the rule. I gotta just state that for the record. We're gonna keep the rule. But here's the difference with life with Chris Blake here versus under this rule prior to Chris Blake. What I've always said is that we're in the accommodation business. What we guarantee you is our effort to accommodate your desires. We can't guarantee you you'll get the request you want for every single trip. But what happens if you go down to the grocery store and you had to book your trip for an hour? If you call Metro Access and we have a vehicle available and they can pick you up and take you back home before your hour pickup window actually begins, we will do our best to do that. There'll be times when that can happen. There'll be times when it cannot happen. But if you call us and ask us, we definitely will do our best to accommodate your requests. So the reason why, and again, having not been here when they put the rule in, but it's an obvious rule in the sense that you have so many people who need the service, you have to schedule. And if you just schedule trips for a 10-minute turnaround, it becomes more of a personal service than a public transportation shared ride service. So I hear your point. This is a rule we've had for a long time. We're not going to change the rule, but at least under this administration, if you will, you can call, request an earlier pickup. And I assure you, Metro Access, the OCC, will try its very, very best to accommodate your request. And that's not just for a 10-minute turnaround. That's for any trip. If you get off work early today after being there for 3 hours instead of 8, you call us and ask us to pick you up early, the OCC will do its very best to accommodate your request. So we've got to keep certain rules in place, but we're putting on top of those rules our desire to be a very accommodating business and operation for you and all customers.
Well, I'm very concerned about it basically for our seniors because there's so many scams going around, you know, things happening to our seniors that they can't control. Like, especially if they're going to the bank or if they're going to pay a bill. I have deep concerns, not as much as at the grocery store because there are a lot of people at those places. But at banks and at insurance places and places where people have to pay, you know, bill payment. And I have on occasion called back, and for the most part, I haven't been able to shorten my ride, but that's okay with me. But I'm just concerned about the seniors, and I appreciate that you said it's available if they try to call.
Yes, please try to call and encourage people to call if they need a pickup time much sooner than their scheduled window.
Okay.
This is Anu. I just want to share information if any members of the public would like to contact us, provide us with their public comments for any of our full committee meetings or subcommittee meetings. They can send us email at metroaacchair@wmata.com, or they can call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. That was my announcement for public comments, Chair Posner.
Yes, thank you very much. And we are at 729 plus. It's been a very rich, full meeting. I think we covered a lot of ground. I'll encourage everyone to be thinking about floating bus stops and what they would like to continue with for the remainder of the year for next month's meeting and enjoy Monday with bus rail. See you all then. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you. Good meeting.